ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। But today we're reading from the glorious Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, verse 9. Please repeat after me. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Word for word. Janma, birth. Karma, work. Cha, also. Me, of mine. Divyam, transcendental. Evam, like this. Yaha, anyone who. Veti, knows. Tattvataha, in reality. Tyaktva, leaving aside. Deham, this body. Punaha, again. Janma, birth. Na, never. Eti, does again. Mam, unto me. Eti, does again. Saha, he. Arjuna, O Arjuna. Is it loud enough? Okay, good. Please turn your phones off. Turn your phone off. Or at least put it on silent mode. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. That's three verses earlier. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, is only partial. And there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body. and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5:33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaitam Achyutam Manade Manantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction. Although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers, as stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bodhini, in the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Deva Nitya Lila Narukto, Bhakta Vyapi Hridi Antaratma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tat Tvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be supreme, or who says unto the Lord, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion: Tameva viditvati mrityum eti nanya panta vidyate yannaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Fateshvatara Upanishad 3.8. There is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently he will not attain salvation. Simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship, such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up, mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born to the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So the main point is tatvataha, in reality. To understand Krishna in reality. Many people have some sentiment for Krishna. Do they like Krishna? Who do you like? Which gods do you like? I like Krishna. He's cute. This is a sentiment. But sentiment is not bhakti. At least it's nice. But Jiva Goswami explains that real bhakti, the kind of bhakti that Krishna is speaking about in this verse, the kind of bhakti that will free you from the material world, that bhakti is grounded in the understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. Without that, it's just sentimentality. Religion without philosophy is sentimentality or fanaticism. And philosophy without religion is mental speculation, which leads to atheism. And in the recent history, mental speculation has killed more people than religious fanaticism, as the gulags of the Soviet Marxist gulags will have proved. They've killed 100 million people in the last 100 years. This is 100 years since the Marxist Revolution. So even Krishna says later in the Gita, he explains that even the Bhagavad Gita is based upon the Brahma Sutras, the Bhadarayana, so that it's totally in keeping. You know, all the principle, that's why it's called the Gita Upanishad. It is the perfection of the Upanishads. But to be able to understand Krishna, one has to be humble. Humility is important. When I first came to India, I remember we would preach to people and say, "Oh, I already know Krishna. I know Krishna. What are you going to tell me about Krishna?" Because they think that Krishna is just mythology. They consider all the stories from the Puranas that they're just stories, that this is mythology. They even have in Bangalore the Mythic Society for studying the mythology of India. The Puranas, Mahabharata, this is all mythology. But the word mythology means it's a fiction. It's not true. And this word mythology was introduced into India by the British, by the Orientalists, the missionaries, to undermine Vedic culture, that this is not true. None of this is true. It's all mythology. There's Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology. It's just fanciful stories with no basis in reality. But it is real. You have to understand the tattva, the reality of Krishna. Only then. But to understand, you have to first become humble. You have to understand how totally insignificant you are in the material creation. From Krishna comes Lord Balaram. From Balaram, the different expansions, Narayan, the Chaturvyuha, like that. And then from them comes Karna Dakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu. And from the breathing, from the pores of his skin, come unlimited, infinite number of universes, billions, untold number. And we are in the smallest of the universes. The smallest of the universes. And in this universe, there are untold billions of galaxies, quasars, various astronomical objects. And in one galaxy in the corner is our galaxy. And in some inconspicuous spot in that galaxy, there's a solar system, ours. And on that solar system, many planets are rotating. And one of those planets is the Earth planet. And on that planet, there are many continents. And one of them is Asia. And in Asia, there's many countries. One is India. India has many states. One is Karnataka. And in Karnataka, there's many, many cities. One is Bangalore. And Bangalore is a big city. And there's many, many parts of Bangalore. And there's Jayanagar. And Jayanagar, there's so many streets, and this is one of them. And there's many, many buildings, and we are in that building. So we are totally insignificant in the scheme of things. So we have to approach God on His terms, not that we think that we know everything, that we can figure out on ourselves who is God, who is Krishna, or He's just a story. When we understand our truly insignificant position, then we have to approach on His terms. His terms means you understand from the Shastra. You understand from through a guru with the Shastras in the Parampara. Then only you can understand Him. You can't understand, as Gaudel proved in his uncertainty principle, that an axiomatic system of sufficient complexity, like arithmetic, you know, adding, subtracting, that will have infinite number of anomalies. And he proved basically that that an axiomatic system can never understand itself. So what to speak of the world, the material world we are in? We can never understand by the ascending process of knowledge. It all has to come from above, from directly from Krishna. That's what the Vedas are. The Vedas are knowledge directly coming from God. So four types of people, Krishna explains, four types of people surrender unto Him. Those who are in material distress, those who are wanting money, they need money. They have to support their family. Various, we need money for a lot of things. Those who are curious, those who are inquisitive, and those who are wise. These four type of people approach Krishna. The common thread amongst these four people is that they are humble. By being in material distress, we're forced to be humble. You know, our body is smashed, we're sick, you know, an earthquake struck, an airplane landed on our house. So many things can happen, go wrong. Or we need finance, we need money. We're in desperate situations. So those two people, automatically, they're humble. Somebody who is inquisitive, they are humble enough to put aside their own opinion to find out, oh, what does it say in this book? That much humility they have, that they are willing to put aside their own opinion. They don't think that if you know everything, then how can you learn anything? If you think you know everything, then you can never learn anything because you know everything. Of course, you don't know anything. But that means you have to put aside your own opinion. And the fourth, those who are wise. Well, those who are wise, by definition, they are humble. Krishna explained in the 13th chapter, 8th verse, the lakshanas of a person who has achieved knowledge, a wise person. The first two lakshanas are anambitvam, adambitvam, the humility and pridelessness. Amanitvam, adambitvam. Humility and pridelessness. So they are humble. That's by definition. These type of persons, they can approach Krishna. They can learn about Krishna. But simply by seeing Krishna, that's not enough. In the Vedanta Sutras, 3.3.53, Vyasadeva explains that just like everybody dies, doesn't mean when you die you will get liberation, because everybody dies. And just simply by seeing Krishna and thinking, and unless you know Krishna, see, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there was millions of soldiers who died. They saw Krishna. But those who did not understand Krishna in truth, they did not go back to Godhead. They did not achieve mukti. They simply went to Svarga because they had to get some punya from seeing Krishna. But because they did not understand who Krishna actually was, they could not get the supreme benefit. That only comes if you know in truth the reality of Krishna, that He is God. So the Vedanta Sutra, in Badrayana, he condenses the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta means the conclusion of all Vedic knowledge, an analysis of, what's wrong? Pointing this thing at me. Just move these. In the Vedanta Sutras, Badarayana, are you finished? Okay. In Vedanta Sutra, Badarayana, he gathers all the Vedic wisdom and explains what is the purpose of the Vedas. He he analyzes various things which appear to be contradictory. He reconciles contradictory statements, and he attacks various systems of atheism, like the atheistic Sankhya philosophy, things like that. And he explains how, from the Sankhya philosophy, how he pervades the whole universe, how his powers, which is explained later in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is, there's so many commentaries on the Vedanta, that of Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, but the ultimate commentary is that of Vyasadeva himself, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he goes through 9 cantos explaining who is Krishna, the power, how Krishna creates the material universe. All in Sankhya philosophy in the 3rd canto, how from the Mahatattva comes the Pradhan. Pradhan comes the Panchamahabhutas, like that. Then there's the Tanmatras, etc. The Buddhi, the intelligence, the mind, false ego, all these different things. And how Krishna is creating all of these things. This, to show Krishna's power. So 9 cantos explaining how Krishna is God. Not something sentimental, but gives all the facts, all the information in detail that Krishna is God. Then in the 10th canto, there's 90 chapters explaining Krishna and his pastime, so that when you get to that, you understand this is God. He can do anything. Nothing is impossible. And Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas, he says, before you can even discuss about Krishna, you have to first, the first axiom is, nothing is impossible for him. He can do anything. If this is a confusing thing for you that you think, he can't do that, then you're not qualified to discuss about Krishna. Because Krishna can do anything. My brother, an atheist, he tried to trick me, he asked me a trick question. He said, if God is so powerful, can he make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? Right? That's a paradox. That God is so, stone is so big, but he can't lift it. That if he can't lift it, he can't be God. What's the answer? The answer is yes. He can make a stone which is so big he can't lift it then. But because Krishna, the Brahman means that it's always expanding. So when he made it, he couldn't lift it. But the very next instant, he could lift it. Because his powers are always increasing. He's always, he's blissful, and his bliss is always increasing. That is the meaning of God. He's always increasing. He's monotonically increasing, if you use a mathematical term. So to give an example of Krishna's potency, there is another verse in the Gita, where this is in the 10th canto, 10th chapter, 12 to 13. Arjuna Uvacha, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum Ahustvam Rishaye Sarve Devarshi Naradas Tata Asito Devala Vyasaha Svayam Chaiva Bravishime. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it. So when Arjuna and the Pandavas were living in the forest, when they're exiled, so they had many, of course, when they were living in Indraprastha, they had a lot of association, but when they were living in the forest, they often met with rishis like Devala, Vyasa, Asita, like that. So one time, So one time they were visiting the ashram of Markandeya Rishi. So Markandeya Rishi is a Chiranjiva, that for every hair on his body, after one kalpa, one day of Lord Brahma, one of the hairs falls out. So one kalpa is 4,320,000,000 years. Actually, 8,640,000,000 years. That's one kalpa. So when that happens, one of his hairs falls out. And he has many hairs. But he looks like he's only 20 years old. So he was answering questions of Yudhisthira. And so one time he was explaining to Yudhisthira that he was in meditation. And when he was meditating, then Lord Vishnu appeared. And Vishnu said, "So what do you want? What benediction can I give you?" And Markandeya Rishi, you know, by this time he had many benedictions because he lived a long time. He says, "My dear Lord, I want to experience your Maya." So Lord Vishnu says, "Okay, tatastu." So then he left. And in due course of time, the Mahapralaya took place. And everything, you know, it rained and rained and rained, and there was no sun and there was no land anymore. And it was completely, totally dark. And Markandeya Rishi was just like, you know, swimming in the water. And there's like sharks are going by and big crocodiles and Timingala fish. And, you know, he's swimming, you know, and it's going on for a long time, really a long time, like billions of years. But as he's, you know, swimming in the water, you know, dog paddling, he sees in the darkness, he sees some light. He's in the dark, in the distance, he sees some light. So he swims to this light. And as he gets close to light, he sees there's a big banyan leaf, and on the banyan leaf is a little baby, a bluish colored baby, and he's sucking his toe. He's got his, you know, babies can do that. They suck on their toes. And he's looking at this baby, and then all of a sudden, and the baby is glowing and smiling, and all of a sudden the baby breathes in, and he sucks Markandeya Rishi inside of the baby. So now he's, the baby breathed Markandeya Rishi in, and Markandeya Rishi is in another universe. And there's no water, there's daylight, there's a whole cities are there, and he's completely baffled, totally confused, and he walks all over this new universe, trying to find the end of the universe. And this is going on for millions of years, trying to find the end of the universe. And then the baby breathes out, boom, and he's back into the water. And he's swimming and is fighting off the crocodiles and the sharks. And after some time, the pralaya ends, the water comes, the sun comes out, and there's dry land. And he's on the dry land. And then Vishnu appears again. And he says, "So, how did you like my Maya?" So after telling this story, Markandeya Rishi says to Yudhisthira, "And you see your cousin over there, Janardhan? That was that baby." And Krishna just smiles. So that is Krishna's power. So when we think of Krishna, it's not some story, not just some sentimental idea that, you know, when we were young, your mother told you about Krishna and his activities. But you have to know who he actually is. It's not some mythology. He is God. And if you understand who is God, then, if you understand who is God, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, Arjuna. That is the benefit of knowing who Krishna is and serving Krishna. Because once you know who he is, then you should serve him. Find out what he likes and do it. It's like Pradyumna. Pradyumna was the son of Krishna. So, he liked so many different things. But if he found out that his father didn't like it, well, he didn't like it anymore. And if he didn't like something, and he found out his father liked it, well then, now he liked it. He wanted to serve his father. So that's the nature of the relationship. Once you know who Krishna is, that we should serve Krishna. So I think we're coming to the end here. So anybody have any questions? Any comments? Questions? All right then. Thank you very much for coming. Hare Krishna.